Okay, quick question, peeps. Have you ever walked out of a DEI training thinking, wow, that was powerful, and then showed up to work on Monday and realized nothing actually changed? Same system, same dynamics, same problems. Yeah. Today, we're talking about why that happens. Hey, friends, welcome back to Workday Playdate with Improve It. I am your host, Erin Deal, and this is the podcast where we talk about leadership and culture like real humans who care and are still figuring it out. This month on the show, we are focused on leadership. Now, not leadership on paper, leadership in practice. Leadership when things are uncomfortable, nuanced, and sometimes politically charged. And today's conversation is one leaders really need to hear. This episode is called Why One-Off DEI Training Backfires, because so many organizations genuinely want to do the right thing. They bring in a training, they host a workshop, they make a big announcement, and then they quietly hope that culture will take care of itself. And when it doesn't, leaders feel frustrated, employees feel unheard, and DEI starts to feel like a problem instead of a solution. That's why I'm so excited about today's guest. Lily Zhang is a no-nonsense strategist, consultant, and author who helps leaders build workplaces that actually work for everyone. Lily is the creator of the FAIR framework, an evidence-based approach to the next evolution of diversity, equity, and inclusion. Their work has been featured in Harvard Business Review, the New York Times, and NPR. They are also the best-selling author of DEI Deconstructed, Reconstructing DEI, and Fixing Fairness. And what I love about Lily is that they bring clarity and practicality to a space that often gets overwhelmed by noise. Now, before we jump in, I want to do a quick pause because if this conversation is resonating, I want you to know that we offer a highly interactive leadership workshop that helps teams turn insight into action. The company that I founded and run, Improve It, is a improv-infused talent development company for the new generation of work. And this workshop is a two-hour experience in person for up to 100 people or can be up to 50 people virtually on Zoom. Now, our seasoned improv facilitators leave participants through high energy activities and customized debriefs centered around one powerful thesis statement: communication plus inspiration equals motivation. Now, participants will learn how to communicate effectively with their team, how to inspire and empower peers through their words and actions, and motivate the people around them to set higher goals and actually achieve more. All right, let's get into it. Here's the problem, y'all. Many organizations treat DEI like an event instead of a leadership practice. One training, one workshop, one moment of awareness, a box checked. Then everybody goes back to business as usual. And leaders are left wondering why things feel awkward, tense, or even worse after the training than before. Research shows that one-off DEI training, especially when it focuses only on awareness or bias, can actually increase defensiveness and disengagement when it's not paired with systems change and leadership accountability. So this is not just ineffective. Sometimes it backfires. And this is why talking with Lily today matters so much, because they don't just point out what went wrong. They help leaders understand what to do differently. Now, here's the epiphany. DEI does not fail because people do not care. It fails because leaders look for shortcuts. We live in a world that loves quick wins and good optics, but culture change does not happen on a highlight reel, y'all. Data shows that organizations that make sustained progress in fairness and belonging treat DEI as ongoing leadership work, not as a one-time intervention. Think of it like leadership fitness. You know, you don't go to one workout and expect lifelong strength. All right, I still got a flabby arm and I'm going to the gym 10 times a month. Now, that's not how bodies work. And it's not how organizations work either. The solution is not more training alone. The solution is leadership accountability, systems change, and clarity around what fairness actually means. And Lily, this is where your FAIR framework really shifts the conversation. Let's get to today's playdate with Lily Zhang. Okay, peeps, I don't even know if you're ready. Oh, by the way, Lily, we call our peeps the peeps community. So welcome to the peeps.
Okay, like the little marshmallow birds.
Like the marshmallow, like where are my peeps at? Yeah, like those, we should give those away actually this spring.
We're gonna
do that.
Excellent marketing.
Yeah, we'll make some shirts, but there's a whole reason behind it. We've officially coerced over 54,000 people to chicken dance at work. It's a whole thing. And so the peeps community is our community, but we, as the peep leader, are thrilled that you are here right now. I'm so excited. Let's do this, because I want to just start by starting off with a one-word intention that you either want to give or receive during our time together today. What's a word that comes to mind for you?
Oh, gosh. Well, we were throwing around the word earlier. So fun. Let's have fun.
Yes.
Let's have a good time. Let's enjoy this conversation.
I'm already enjoying it. Like you said, I wish we hit record earlier, because I was like, I could. But you know what? That was for us. Sometimes we do things for the peeps. That was for us. Okay. So let me ask you this. Where are we playing at this play date today? Like, if we could envision ourselves somewhere on a play date, where are we?
Ooh, like, I don't know. If you were to like transport the listeners of the conversation to some like stage or something. Ooh,
yes.
Okay. Let's see. A big ol' open meadow.
Ooh.
Like a giant grassy meadow. How about that?
I love a giant grassy meadow. And is it just like open space for days with trees and grass?
Well, the first thing that came to mind is like Sound of Music, you know, like just like in the mountains, you know, like lots of singing white girls and good vibes.
The hills are alive. Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. Well, we can make that happen. We're here for that. We're on the grassy meadow today, just having fun. Okay. That's what we're here to do at this play date. So let's just start off. Let's go straight into it, because I love that you have a framework. And I love that you said, you're like, I told a podcast host to dissect my framework. I just want to hear about it. We'll see what happens. Let's talk about the FAIR framework. What is the FAIR framework?
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's set the stage a little more. So first of all, I feel like 75% of people, their eyes glaze over when you say the word framework. Because these are just boring, you know, words that are lined up next to each other. And you're like, why is this another, you know, stale, abstract thing that's trying to tell me how to live my life? Right? Like, what's the point? Why am I learning about this? So we'll kind of shelve the framework for like 10 seconds. And I'll talk a bit about like why we need it.
Can I make a new word for it for you?
Yeah, sure.
For today,
sure.
Since you're on a play date, it's maybe the playbook.
The playbook.
The FAIR playbook.
Okay, you know, it's funny you say that, because I happen to be wearing like a LinkedIn Learning instructor t-shirt right now. And the course that I taught on LinkedIn Learning was a playbook to achieve equity anywhere.
There you go.
So it's funny you mentioned that, because I've already been making playbooks. Anyways, so why do we need a playbook, right? Why do we need this? Our workplaces are incredibly broken for pretty much everybody. I have a series of fun and depressing questions I like asking people. So I'll ask you some. What percent of American workers do you think have experienced discrimination?
85 to 90.
Ooh, so close. 91.
91. Okay.
Yeah. Hooray.
Yay. Not great.
Yay. It's not everybody. Great.
Yeah.
It's everybody. And, you know, when you look at the rates of discrimination over time, they're not getting better. Like, they're just not getting better. Like, man, there was a study that came out in like 20, 2016 or something that looked at rates of discrimination against Black Americans between 1990 and 2015. It is a flat line. It hasn't gotten better, right? Our workplaces are just as bad today as they were 15, 20, 25 years ago. More than that. So, you know, when we look at the workplace around us, right, we have this weird upside down feeling of thinking, well, people are talking more and more about this thing called diversity, equity, inclusion, DEI, right? People are talking about fairness. We're talking about justice. We're talking about belonging. We're talking about all these words that feel really good and that, you know, maybe we didn't use as much 20 years ago. And then when you look at the cold, hard numbers, simultaneously, nothing's getting better. And so, you know, for me and for a lot of practitioners in this field, for social scientists, we've been tearing our hair out, basically asking ourselves, how is it possible that we could talk so much about this, that we could, you know, create an entire industry around talking about these things and trying to fix these things, and to have the problems just go unfixed?
Yeah.
So this framework, right, this FAIR framework is my latest attempt to try to unstick us from this stagnant status quo, right? To actually restart progress, to make it so discrimination rates go down, so people actually can get back onto the American dream, so people can actually regain access to opportunities, so that people can work in workplaces that work for them. I mean, like this isn't rocket science. And I'm also like, you know, not saying things that are particularly aspirational, like, geez, I sure hope that people can expect to go to work and get their work done and get paid, you know, a wage that allows them to survive. Like, yeah, you know, I'm just asking for the moon, apparently.
Yeah.
But the framework is how we do that, right?
Okay.
And specifically is how we break out of the last 2 to 3 decades of spinning around in circles without achieving real change. And I'm happy to dive into the framework too. But like that why, right, the reason why we need that framework, I think is really important to set first.
Okay, let's talk about that. I think when you got into this data, right, this data that is terrifying and sad that we've been on this flat line and that 91% of us are truly not feeling welcomed or safe, psychologically safe or even safe, period, in our workspaces. Yeah, that's a pretty nice tone of the why, Lily. Okay. That right there is like just common decency, human decency, right? And
yeah.
I think too, just from where we're sitting right now, I want to talk about this because your framework, okay, is actually a little bit different from the legacy DEI approaches that we've experienced in the past. Let's just talk about that. How is it different?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I can't see the listeners right now, but I'll ask you.
But you can feel them. You can feel
those.
I can
feel them. I can feel them. Right. So if you're listening to this right now, just imagine that I'm asking you this question. If you'll feel free to like raise your hand or whatever,
okay,
right?
Okay.
So like raise your hand if you've ever been to, let's say, a cultural heritage celebration. I'm raising my hand. Or a 60-minute or 90-minute unconscious bias training. I'm raising my hand. Or a retreat where you bring in a speaker to talk about how important a commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion is. I'm raising my hand. I've also been that speaker sometimes. So, you know, the playbook, right? The old playbook, the way we achieve DEI in the past has been relentlessly focused on these kinds of interventions, these kinds of solutions, right? We tend to solve problems with trainings, with speakers, with pretty commitments, with a full events calendar that's full of, you know, what lots of practitioners kind of derisively call food, flags, and fun, right? And that's just kind of all we do.
Yeah.
Over and over and over again, right? We just say like, well, we brought in a speaker, we did an event with food, flags, and fun. So now let's just kind of spin the dial and see which one of these we'll do next, and then we'll do it again.
Yeah.
And then we'll do it again, and then we'll do it again.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, their workers are like, wow, I haven't been promoted in 6 years. Wow, I think the men are still speaking over me in the meetings. Wow, I think I've just been discriminated against for the 10th time this week. Wow, my manager is an asshole. Well, I don't think I'm getting paid fairly. And, you tell me, right? Like, do you think a 90-minute training fixes any of this? No, of course not, right? And I say this as someone that has provided that training for many, many years, right? I spent the first good chunk of my career trying to train leaders to do different and to train workplaces to do different. But I quickly found that what leaders were requesting from me wasn't what I believed and what the research shows actually worked. So as a practitioner, I was basically saying like, look, right, if you want to use training, it's not a matter of the perfect training because there's nothing I can do in 90 minutes that'll fix your workplace, right? It's about what you do before and after the training. It's how you set it up. It's how you incentivize it. It's how you align your existing policies and practices and processes with what I'm teaching in the training. It's how you, you know, follow up after the training to talk to your managers and make sure that there's behavior change. Are you willing to do those things? And the leaders I talked to were like, maybe not, Lily, but we'd still love you to come in for 60 minutes and do a little song and a dance.
Right.
We'll even pay you.
We want the fun flags and what was it? Fun flags and
food flags and fun.
Food flags and fun. I've never heard that. And I will always quote you on that. That is so.
Well, it's not my term. People have been using it forever, but sure. You can say you heard about it.
I heard it from Lily. I hope you're enjoying my conversation with Lily Zhang. We'll be right back after a quick break from our sponsors. Thank you for supporting those who support the show. You're listening to Workday Playdate on the Passion Struck Network. Now back to my conversation with Lily Zhang. This is so important to dissect because I remember there was this huge rush in 2020 to do this.
Yes.
And I know for a fact I have many friends in the DEI space who felt very similar to you, who felt like, okay, this is, you know, I'm going to do this. However, I want to make sure exactly what you're saying. There's a protocol before you're setting it up for me, and you're also having a legacy after I leave. It's not just this one and done training. But what do you think the biggest misconception was even at that time for the leaders asking you to do the food flags and fun? Like, what was the misconception there?
Okay. So depending on whether I'm having a good day or a bad day, I either think of it as a misconception or I think of it as cynicism.
Okay. Let's just say,
am I giving leaders the benefit of the doubt today?
No,
right.
No, Lily, give me both sides. We want both sides.
Okay. So the best possible leader, right? They're a good person. They care about their people. They want to do the right thing. They've heard about this DEI thing. They've heard about, you know, the protests after the murder of George Floyd. They think, well, racism is a bad thing. I don't want it here in my company. I got to fix it. How do I fix it? I have no idea. Well, it seems like my employees are really eager for something that I can show them really fast to demonstrate my commitment. I'm just going to get a Google search, right? Anti-racism workshop, right? Because, you know, I've heard that. Great. I see a list of names. I'll just contact one of them and be like, hey, can you come in and see if there's something going on wrong and fix my stuff? Then they bring someone in that someone is probably really good at their job. They're like, yes, anti-racism. You know, racism is terrible. It's important that we work together to end it. You know, like, here's some words you can say. Here's some practices you can do. You know, like, good luck. I believe in you. The leader's like, all right, I did it. You know, like, we have to uphold our commitment to an anti-racist culture. We can do that, right? A couple weeks passed. Their employees are like, okay, that was a good training. A couple more weeks passed. And then their employees are like, so, you know, our managers are still kind of saying awful stuff in meetings, right? Are we going to do something about that? A couple more weeks passed. I don't think I'm getting paid fairly. Were we going to do something about that, right? Or like our promotions process is super broken. Our hiring process is not looking very good. Why is our entire leadership team made of white dudes? Are we going to do anything about this? And the leader suddenly finds themselves like, you know, staring down the gun barrel of saying like, oh, okay. So when I said I wanted to solve racism, I didn't realize that I'd actually like have to do things about it, right? Like, like now there's a lot of pressure on me to change all of these aspects of my workplace. Well, that's a lot of work. And we kind of have our financial targets to meet this year. So like, I'll hire a person to do it and like hope that they can make some progress by next year, right? That's even the most well-intentioned of leaders.
Yep.
Now let's tell the story from the
cynicism. We want the cynicism.
The cynical, evil asshole leader, right?
Yeah. Give us that one, Lily.
Right. So, man, you know, like, I'm like, what a waste of time. My employees are pissed at me again. And it's fine, right? Like, I have a chance to earn some brownie points. This is just a PR exercise. And so what I can do is I'll just bring in someone. And I know that if I just keep on putting people in front of my employees, you know, to entertain them, this is food and circuses. And so, you know, they'll just keep on believing in me and believing that we're going to do something. But you know how much it costs to actually do a pay equity audit? Way too much. You know how much it costs to actually fix our hiring process? Probably too much. You know how much it costs to bring in a speaker once every year for an hour? Not much at all.
Yeah.
So I'll just keep doing that, right? I'll just keep doing that. It's really cheap. The ROI is great. I just have to shell out $5,000 once a year, right? Or maybe even $10,000 if I'm feeling generous. And then, you know, if people don't like it, or if they lose trust or they lose faith, well, good thing I'm going to be laying off 10% of them every year anyways. So it doesn't really matter, right? And I can just get away with this.
Oh, Lily, this hurts my body. My body hurts.
It hurts so bad because I think a lot of people listening to this, I mean, we've had those doubts before.
Yeah.
Right. And perhaps we've worked under leaders like that before where, you know, we think, look, at the end of the day, is this not just appeasement? Do you actually not care about people? Right. And you just see us as numbers on a spreadsheet, right? Like costs to cut year after year. And I think as the, you know, DEI movement, as the wave of interest in DEI has kind of stagnated and soured over the last few years, I think people are more and more skeptical when they've seen leaders be so callous towards their workforce. And, you know, frankly, I actually think it's a really good thing because now when leaders say like, hey, we care, we're committed, people don't think about, you know, like, oh, you're going to finally solve racism. They think, didn't you just lay off 10% of us like 2 weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that skepticism, that's good. That's really good. I think we need to be holding our leaders' feet to the fire to make sure that if our workplaces claim to care about people, that they actually follow through with their actions.
Oh, amen. Hey, that's the church. That's the choir going, yes. Okay. So good. I'm glad I asked that question. I'm glad you gave both examples because I just we needed both sides on their best day and on the truest day. And there's so many great. Listen, when we're talking about leaders, peeps, I'm just going to speak to the peeps real quick. We know y'all love your people. We're talking about the people at the top. We're talking about the leadership top down. It is a trickle effect. And you listening today, you might not be the CEO. You might be the chief people officer, the chief HR officer, whatever it may be. You have the ability to do exactly what Lily is mentioning and use your voice to help make this change. We need more voices making change. We need more people speaking up like Lily. And I told Lily this before we hit record. I have been following you on LinkedIn for a long time. I don't even know. We got to connect, Lily. Can we please connect now?
Sure. You know, LinkedIn has a 30,000 people connection limit and I'm at like 29,900 something. So I'm like,
okay.
I know, you get one. You get one.
We need each other, okay?
Well, I have to talk to people before I send the connection request now, because otherwise I'm going to use my like last 100 spots and I need to start getting rid of people.
I get it. But we need your voice on there. We need it loud and clear. And I've been following it. And if you are not following Lily on LinkedIn, stop what you're doing. Go into your LinkedIn app and hit follow because the content is so good and you practice what you preach. And I want everyone here to know this is a starting conversation. Your work goes deep. Your work is in that framework/playbook. Your work is going to be your project here on Earth. Like that is your legacy. Is what you are doing is helping. And I have this. I don't know who said this either. I can't give them credit. But there's an acronym: HOPE. Help one person every day. And if you, Lily, could just even keep that in your back pocket, because I'm sure you feel like you're screaming into a void and no one's listening. But if you truly help one person from this show today to go to their leadership and make the case for DEI at the top, for not discontinuing their DEI program in their organization, for making a stand and taking a stand to make sure people feel seen, heard, and valued, you have done your job, friend.
Well, why don't we actually talk a bit about that, right? Yeah. Like how, because I think, you know, I'm willing to bet almost everyone listening here is thinking like, okay, well, I want to be one of those good leaders. I want to at least, you know, do my best and ideally make a difference and not just admire the problem, right? I want to do differently. So how do I do that? How do you go to your senior leadership? How do you go to your C-suite and actually make the case? And you know, the reason why I'm framing the question like this is because I spend all day advising those kinds of leaders on how to make that case. And the landscape's changed a lot over the last couple of years, right? I think the PR exercise of DEI, like that rationale is kind of going away. A lot of leaders are thinking like, look, you know, it's risky. I don't want to put myself out there. I don't want to even say the acronym. I think there was a recent study by like Gravity Research or something that found that mentions of DEI dropped by like 90, 92%, 94%, something like that in the last year. Companies are not even using the acronym. They're terrified. And so if you're an internal leader, right, and you're feeling, I don't know, maybe a little despair, saying like, I guess the work is behind us. I guess we're only going to get worse from here. I think my advice to you is to move away from saying like DEI is an ideology that I'm here to champion, and instead say DEI or whatever we want to call it, whether fair or something else, is problem solving. We're here to solve the problems that our people are facing, regardless of how you want to describe that acronym, right? It doesn't matter. If people have awful managers, if people's managers aren't collaborating, they're not transparent, they're not communicating well, they don't have those soft skills, then you got to fix that because yep. That has real costs. Those costs can be translated into turnover, into retention risks, into a lack of succession planning, into brand damage, into all sorts of negative outcomes. And so you can say, look, you know, our workplace is full of problems. Every single workplace is, whether it's with your culture, your processes, your practices, your people, your strategy, you've got problems. And those problems are negatively impacting your people. If you solve those problems for your people, you make your workplace better. And ultimately, you know, you help your workplace succeed more. Now, 20 years ago, we called this the business case for diversity. I don't care what you call it these days, right? These days, I think the most important thing that we do is that we make our workplaces better for the people in them. And that needs to be our North Star at all times, right? Like enough with this abstract, like, you know, belonging isn't just this shiny word that we put on a pedestal, right? Like scrap that. It doesn't matter, right? The language is a means to an end. What matters is that there are real people in your workplace. You're having a really bad time. And it's probably partially because of workplace design and partially because they are being discriminated against or treated worse because of who they are. So understand those problems really well, learn what's going on in your workplace, put out some surveys, I don't know, bring in a consultant. And once you understand what's going on in your workplace, fix it.
Yep.
Fix it however you can, whether that's hiring new people, changing your policy, organizational change management. I'll leave it up to y'all, right? And the consultants you choose to work with.
Yeah.
And the consultants. But you don't need consultants right. is the thing, right? Ultimately, it's about like, are you willing to solve your problems?
Yeah.
And like that's the question at the end of the day. It's not about ideology. It's not about political affiliation. Are you willing to solve your problems? Yes or no? If the answer is no, you probably shouldn't be listening to this conversation. Yeah. If the answer is yes, there's so much you can do about it.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we need to be pushing this dialogue away from the kinds of, I don't know, culture war, either or, you're a good person or a bad person, and just towards this, like, our workplaces suck.
Yeah.
And they need to suck less,
there
right?
You like, there you go. Workday Playdate is here for that reason, too. We need to have more fun. Okay, I'm going to take this very, I'm going to yes and you. That's what we say in improv. Okay, I'm going to say yes to everything Lily said. And I'm pausing. This is the great pause because I'm just going to go there.
You got to figure out your yes and.
I got to figure out my yes and. Okay, I literally love what you said. Because it's a problem-solving solution. We get so worked up about these semantics, like these stupid semantics. All human beings just want to feel loved. And what if you, the people listening today, could zoom out a little bit and you could say, what was my greatest gift on this earth? And what if your greatest gift on this earth was leaving a legacy where you made people feel important? Where you made people feel like they had a sign around their necks. This is cheesy as hell, Lily, that says, make me feel important. Because if they felt that way, wouldn't that change everything about how they showed up and what that did to productivity and what productivity did for whatever your product, service, whatever your mission is for the world? But it could start with you. And if you just zoom out just a little bit, I've been thinking a lot about just the afterlife. small things. What's the meaning of it? But I've been really thinking a lot about the purpose for every human on this earth. And I've had some grief lately of my own, honestly. And it's really making me just question, what do I want to leave here? What do I, as a human being, want to leave? What legacy? What do I want to help one person do? And so, Lily, what you're doing is helping coach and consult leaders to leave a legacy. Like, you already need to zoom out on what you do. You're not helping with DEI. Scrap that if that's like too semantical for you, right? Not you, but the people listening, right? You are literally helping people leave an impact on other human beings that can make or break their life and their time here on earth. And that's real spiritual. She got real woo. But I'm thinking about your work as a whole, because at some point I think people are going to care less about the words used. We all want the same thing. And your work is leaving lasting impacts. The people that hire you want to leave a legacy. They recognize there's a problem.
I think so. So, you know, it's funny you mention this, because I think about very similar things too, right?
And okay, thank you.
And when it comes to
zoom out.
No, it's really relevant, because when you talk to leaders, you know, I find that, yes, a lot of them are obsessed in some way with legacy. And I think sometimes people stumble in that obsession and think, you know, I'm building a legacy for myself. I need to exploit people to create that legacy of mine, right? Mm. And when you look at some of the titans of industry, right, like some of the biggest and most evil workplaces right now, right? Like this is the mentality at the top, right? The reason leaders can be so callous and lay off, you know, 10%, 20% of their workplace every couple of months is precisely because they're obsessed with that legacy. They think, you know, the only way I can build this, you know, tower to the heavens is if I run all the people as part of my organization into the ground and extract every last piece of value from them. And I find it to be a really empty endeavor, because ultimately, and the leaders that I think get it, right, that like the leaders that understand this have realized this, but ultimately the company you're building, right, the shareholder profit you're creating, like, that's the weirdly ephemeral stuff. That's the stuff that no one's going to remember in 100 years, 200 years. It's the fact that you're doing this work alongside people, right, making the world better for people. I feel like that's the legacy that maybe, first of all, our society doesn't do a good enough job recognizing. And so, you know, collectively, we've got a culture problem here. But I think, like, that's the work that, more important than legacy, feels meaningful.
Yeah.
To leaders, right? Like when people are old on their deathbed, right, in your 90s, or your hundreds or however long people end up living by the time we all die,
right?
They're not going to think, man, when I was 40, you know, I made $60 trillion of shareholder value. No one's going to say that.
Yeah, I can't. I'm so glad I got in on that equity. You know, I'm so glad.
Exactly. Yeah. Like the things that connect us, right? Like the things that leave a mark are like, I help so many people. Like, I made the world such a good place. And, you know, I feel really sad for some of the leaders that have like neutered or killed off that part of themselves to say, like, I need to turn off my empathy. I need to turn off my connection to community. I need to turn off my connection to my friends, my family, my loved ones, you know, all because I need to make number go up.
Yes.
Right? Like it's not a way to live. You know, there's also the fact that it's destroying our planet and destroying, you know, our communities and all that too. But like, even if we're just talking about the personal perspective, it's a terrible way to live. And I wouldn't wish it on anyone.
Ego. It's ego. It's literally an ego-based way to live. And I think the legacy that I feel like a lot of our community, because Lily, we got a great community here. The peeps deeply care. Like, they deeply care for the individuals. When somebody calls you, I hope it's because they genuinely care. If they've been told to call you, I'm sure it's a different story. But for us too, with the work that Improve It does, when somebody calls us, it's because they want something different for their people. They care genuinely. They're putting their own ego to the side and they're stepping in and they're saying, I want my people to feel a certain way. And that's the higher self. That's the person, that's the leader leading with their full highest intention. And when they lead from that place, I mean, you can just step out of like the semantics of work, the like, I'm going to say 3D leadership and maybe get a little bit in the 5D leadership.
Sure.
Okay. When you can look out versus like in it, you can see that what Lily is doing and the work that you do in your consulting practice and the work that you put out on LinkedIn is doing for human beings. And even if today we hit one person with this message and they feel it, then this is the job done, because it is not easy. The work that you do, you get backlash. I've seen it. And you are standing strong in your voice. So kudos to you for doing that. I hope you own that and feel that, because it's a hot topic right now and you're owning it with grace.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a hard topic. And I wish it wasn't, you know, like sometimes when I think about this work, you know, sometimes I hear all the vitriol around it and it confuses me, right? Because, you know, I look around and some of the people who are most angry about this work, they're suffering too in their workplaces. They've just convinced themselves that the pie is a tiny thing and any more for anyone else means less for them. It's really unfortunate, because I think they've kind of convinced themselves that a better world is not possible.
Yeah.
That, you know, however we have it now is the best it's going to get. And we just need to retreat in ourselves and fight to not lose. And, you know, like, I feel like this applies to not only workplaces, but like business, to life, to everything. When you're fighting to not lose, it's not a very good way to live. Mm-hmm. Like it's not a joyful way to live. It's not a healthy way to live. You end up terrified. You end up scared. You end up, you know, like possessive of what you have, and you close your mind off to the possibility of better. And so if instead we can ask ourselves not what do you stand to lose if things change, but rather what do you stand to gain if things get better, I think, you know, we can go across, you know, these boundaries between our groups or, you know, our political beliefs or whatever, and to start saying like, well, what can we do together, right? How can we work with our neighbors, our colleagues, our leaders, and, you know, say, hey, you know, we might disagree on how to fix things, but let's look around. This isn't the best we deserve. We deserve better. And if you agree with me, then how are we going to make it? How are we going to make it better? And that's what I wish we can bring to this conversation more. You know, not who has it worse, because there's no way to answer that question. At least not in a way that people will agree with, right? And rather, it doesn't matter who has it worse. We all have it pretty bad right now. Like you see the world around us? It's terrible.
Yeah, it's fire.
Yeah, it's a dumpster fire, you know? And do we deserve that? No, I think we all deserve better. Every single person in the world deserves, you know, a home to sleep in, right? Food on the table, opportunity, ways to survive and thrive. You know, we all deserve these things and we don't have them. And that's a tragedy. And there's a whole lot of us and we can do something about it. How are we going to do that?
That's right. Like
that's a conversation we can have every day.
I love that. And I love the juxtaposition really there. And I'm going to say the word again. People get all sweaty armpits when I say it. Love versus fear. And love can exist at work, y'all. Okay, it can exist. And it exists. And you, what I think you're mentioning, Lily, is really stepping into the community, the love, the camaraderie of us versus the divide of us and the fear of what else is to come. Why not fix what is, why not make what is here better and enjoy the ride? We got one chance, man. You know, well, I don't know. We'll talk about that later. That's a whole other
podcast. I feel like we can neither know nor not know how many chances we have. And so we should act like we have one.
We act like we have one. So, okay, if I was a peep listening today, what would you say to the peep listening who is inspired, who wants to make a difference? Maybe they don't have the directional opportunity to make the change without leadership. Maybe they're mid-level in their organization and they're kind of managing up, managing down. What would you say to that peep today to take one action step? Like, what's one thing they can do today?
Yeah. Make real the value of people. So, you know, we all can feel in our heads, in our hearts, in our souls, whatever you want to think about, you know, the value of people. We see the folks around us, you know, we see our colleagues, we feel the mission, right, of our workplace, if our workplace has a mission that we vibe with. But we can't really quantify that sometimes. We can't put that into words. And some of the hardest part of this work is putting that into words, saying, you know, the value of people is not a nice to have. In fact, this entire organization runs on people. And so if there's one thing you can do, right, is to translate the value of people into a language that your leadership can understand. So if your leaders are, I don't know, let's say dead set on expanding into a new market, make it very clear the people required to do that, the benefit in terms of people when you do that, the cost in terms of people if you do it wrong, you know, like you can translate the value of people into their goals. If their goals are, I don't know, what's something asinine? Increasing revenue for the next quarter. Sure, you can translate the value of people into that as well, right? You can be like, look, these are the costs of doing that, of achieving that goal. But if we can do right by our people, this is the possibility of doing this right, you know? We can use HR metrics like turnover or retention or engagement. That's one way we can translate the value of people. But we can also talk about things in terms of other, like I worked with engineers and salespeople before, right? And for them, they care about the code that they ship or they care about the number of sales they make. You can translate the value of people into that as well, right? You can say, look, the institutional knowledge that you lose when you lose your best salesperson because they hate working in your workplace, that is immeasurable. Think of how many clients you lose because of that, right? Like, what would happen if your best salesperson who owns personally, you know, 15 to 20% of your entire clientele decides that they've had enough and they leave and 20% of your clients go with them instead, right? What's the value of that? So this translation work is one of the single most important things people in the middle layer can do because the people above you, they're taking the value of people for granted, right? Like they see all the load-bearing work that the people are doing and then they hand wave it and they're just like, oh, that's fine. That'll be around forever. We can count on it. And that's not the case. right? One of the most powerful things you can do is to make it clear that that's not the case and to say, unless we treat our people better, we're in for a whole world of hurt when they decide that they're going to leave or they get ill or they quit or heaven forbid, right?
So good. So good. So, so good. And I think if you're listening today, we're going to put this in the show notes too as an opportunity for people to take this one takeaway and keep it, put it in their back pocket because it will translate. Trust me, it will translate because you lead a company, Lily. I lead a company. It translates. Like if I were to lose my top, the person that knows the most about our company, I mean, that's just, you can't put a price tag on it.
I'm
you,
scared thinking about it.
Me too. I'm like, you literally can't put a price tag on it. So I loved this conversation with you. I know the peeps. First of all, you got to follow Lily on LinkedIn. Lily on LinkedIn. That's an actor's warm up. Lily on LinkedIn. Where can they find out more about you? We did not get into the fair playbook / framework completely.
Oh, yeah. I got so wrapped up in all this conversation that I didn't even dive into the book.
No, but this is the teaser. They have to get your book. So where can where can they get your book and find you and all the things?
Yeah, well, you can currently buy my book anywhere books are sold. It's out now. You can go on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can support your local bookstore if you shop on Bookshop. Let's see. Oh, there's so many different places to buy it. IndieBound, Indigo. Basically, wherever you like to buy books, look up Fixing Fairness, Four Tenets to Transform Diversity Backlash into Progress for All, or just Fixing Fairness. And you'll find the book. It has a bright orange cover. It's
yes.
It's so bright.
Oh, I like the cover. That's a very
You want to see it?
Yes. Oh,
yeah,
okay. Y'all.
So
it
pretty.
It's gorgeous.
So pretty.
It's so pretty. You need to get this book. And also, like I said, follow Lily on LinkedIn. Your work is transformational. And like I said, we get pitches on the show to have guests on the show all the time. And when I saw your name, I was like, let's go. I was so excited. So this has been an honor for me. I think we had fun.
Did you have fun?
I had so much fun in the grassy meadow. I feel like we nailed it. So, all right. This is my last question, Lily. How are you going to make work more playful today?
Today? Oh, gosh. What am I doing today? Well, just a behind the scenes of what I'm up to these days. I'm currently trying to catch up with every client that I've worked with over the last 5 years and be like, hey, what's new? Also, I have a book. And I am doing the slightly silly thing of trying to personalize every single message instead of just, you know, like copy pasting all of them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, like I feel like that's fun. I feel like making it so that people feel seen and heard when they get this mass email in their inbox. I feel like that's fun. I want them to feel like I'm thinking about them because I am thinking about them. Yeah, and I hope they feel it. So yeah.
We'll send some good energy. Good energy to your clients.
It's a lot of email writing.
I know. This is what I like to do sometimes when I do that kind of like monotonous type stuff. I'll put on a killer playlist. I'll light a candle and I'll vibe it out for a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And then it just like sets me in a mood. And then I'm like, I can get a snack in 1 hour. And then I go get a snack. Okay. Because we like snacks. Lily. Okay. Thank you so much for coming on this show. Everybody go get Lily's book and follow on LinkedIn. We're going to put everything in the show notes. Thanks for playing, Lily.
Thanks for having me.
All right, my peeps. As we wrap up today's show, here's what I want to leave you with. These one-off DEI trainings do not fail because people don't care. It fails because leadership stops too soon. Fairness is not built in a moment. It is built through consistent leadership choices. I want to thank my guest, Lily, for your clarity, your honesty, and your commitment to helping leaders do this work better. And now, my peeps, it is time for the Playdate practice. Here is your Playdate practice to put into motion this week. This week, I want you to look at one system you influence. Maybe it's a meeting. Maybe it's a hiring process. Maybe it's a performance review, a decision-making norm. And I want you to ask one simple question. Who does this work well for? And who might it intentionally leave out? You don't have to fix everything this week. Just notice Awareness paired with action is where leadership actually begins. So my peeps, that is it for today's show. Until next time, keep playing, keep learning, and keep leading with intention. I'll see you then.